Join me in Deuteronomy chapter 32, verse 44, which says, Moses came and recited all the words of this song in the hearing of the people, he and Joshua, the son of Nun. So we spent the last three sessions going over the details of the song of Moses, which God gave him as a reinforcement tool for the Israelis going into the Promised Land. It's actually a prophetic witness against future generations of Israelis whenever they blow God off, whenever they go against the covenant and start worshiping other gods and goddesses and just doing whatever they want. This song will be around for a very long time to provide that witness. So we kind of have to picture Moses and Joshua maybe singing this song, chanting this song with an accompaniment of music. It's going to take a little while to get through that and for the people to start memorizing it, because it's intended to be memorized. We think that this started on the first day of the 11th month of the 40th year of the Exodus, because that was the day specified for Moses' final address, the book of Deuteronomy, for all practical purposes. And this song seems to have been included as part of that responsibility of passing it on to the Israelis. So now, we are finishing with the writing of the book of Deuteronomy, the memorization of the Song of Moses, and that probably pushes us well into the 11th month, maybe even to the tail end of the 11th month. And now we're ready to say goodbye to Moses. Almost. Moses, when he had finished speaking all these words to Israel, he said to them, take to heart all the words by which I'm warning you today, that you may command them to your children, that they may be careful to do all the words of this law. For it is no empty word for you, but your very life. And by this word you shall live long in the land that you are going over to the Jordan to possess. And that echoes some of the wording we saw earlier in the book. It actually echoes some of the things God said in the Ten Commandments, that by doing what God said, the way God said to do it, you won't get yourself in trouble. You won't end up catching the diseases or getting yourself cursed and executed, you will have a longer life. And so here is Moses at the tail end of his own life saying to his students of the past 40 years, I want you to pay attention to what I've told you. I want you to take to heart every bit of this procedure we've been working on and do it right. Do it God's way, so that you will be able to have a long life in the land. Now, saying that is definitely his heart, but he also knows that these folks, a very large portion of them, are going to blow him and God off. And that is very frustrating to him here at the end of his life, I think. Verse 48, that very day, he who is spoke to Moses, go up this mountain of the Abarim, Mount Nebo, which is in the land of Moab, opposite Jericho, and view the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the people of Israel for a possession. Now, this is now Moses preparing to pass on. He had been told earlier by God, you're not going to the Promised Land, quit asking me for a reprieve of that condemnation. You're going to be able to see the promised land from afar, but you will not enter it because of your sin. So now's the day that is getting ready to happen. Now, Josephus, who is a first century AD, Jewish Pharisee, historian, priest, he passes on to us an awful lot of the traditions of the Israelis in his time period. And they actually put a date on Moses' death. They say that he died on the first day of the 12th month of the Jewish year. So if that would be accurate, then we're basically the month following the giving of the book of Deuteronomy in its verbal form. But it's just tradition. You don't find any of that clearly stated in the text itself that we have in front of us that's inspired by God. Mount Nebo gets its name because of Moses. It is Nebo is based on the Hebrew word for a prophet. And so it's Prophet Mountain. Before that, Pisgah was what it was known as, but now it'll be known as the Mountain of the Prophet. And it is, we don't know exactly where it is. There's a traditional ridgeline. There's even a church building that's been put there. On the east side of the Jordan River, a few miles up the slope from the plains of Moab, the little flat area that is just northeast of the Dead Sea. I think, and it's just my opinion, based on what I'm going to tell you, I think that probably the ridgeline that is about a mile south from that traditional ridgeline fits better with Moses having a good view, not just simply up the Jordan River toward Galilee, but down the Dead Sea toward Zoar. That ridgeline about a mile south of the traditional site, you can see all of the North Bay from the top of that ridgeline. And so I think that's the much more likely place. But it's only about 8 miles from the encampment area where Moses had been spending the last year with the Jewish people. Verse 50. And die on the mountain which you go up, and be gathered to your people, as Aaron, your brother, died in Mount Hor and was gathered to his people. That was earlier in the year. Because you broke faith with me in the midst of the people of Israel at the waters of Meribah Kadesh in the wilderness of Zin, and because you did not treat me as holy in the midst of the people of Israel. Now the incident, if you've forgotten, or maybe you're new to this journey with us, happened earlier in the year, right at the beginning of the year. And Moses was irritated, angry, that the people were griping and complaining about water. And God told him to go and speak to the rock and provide water. And Moses goes out and wails on the rock with his stick, his rod of power, strikes it twice, and says, and I think it's the words that get him into trouble more, how many more times, how much longer are we going to have to keep providing to you rebels? And so he did not give proper deference to God being the provider. Some teachers think that he struck the rock twice and thereby broke the prophetic symbol of Jesus being the rock that was only struck once. But I think that's a secondary thing. It's more his attitude. He made it all about himself rather than about the true and living God. And that's when God said, no, I can't let you get away with that. You have to have some sort of penalty. And the best penalty is going to be you don't get to go into the promised land. However, you will get to see it. Verse 52, for you shall see the land before you, but you shall not go up there into the land that I'm giving to the people of Israel. So you can see, but you can't enter. Chapter 33, Moses keeps on adding a little bit more prophetically and educationally before he passes. Josephus indicates that Moses gave kind of a final blessing to the Israeli people. He took the leaders up the hill with him at least part of the way, and the high priest Eleazar and Joshua even farther up the hill toward where he's going to die. But somewhere along the way, this is what happens. His final words. This is the blessing with which Moses, the man of God, blessed the people of Israel before his death. And he said, and the words that he uses here, it's kind of poetic, but it is prophetic. He is taught by the Holy Spirit certain little things that apply to the different tribes that are under his care. And so that comes out in this prophetic blessing. But it starts first with a reminder of who's in charge, who is the one doing all of this exodus and now the entrance into the promised land. He who is came from Sinai. So that's where they spent the first year of their time in the wilderness, learning from God, getting the Ten Commandments, getting the instructions on how to build the tabernacle and how to have the priesthood and all of that. They were at Mount Sinai. From there, they moved to the southern entry point, where they were going to go into the promised land from Kadesh Barnea. Kadesh Barnea, the authentic location of it, I believe, is between the next two places mentioned here. He dawned from Seir upon us. Now, Mount Seir is also known as Edom, but the mountainous part of it is down in the southwest corner of Edom, not very far from the modern archaeological tourist zone called Petra. On the other side of Mount Seir, toward the west, there is this mostly flat corridor that goes from the southern end of the Dead Sea down to the northern end of the Gulf of Aqaba arm for the Red Sea. Well, right across that flat corridor from Mount Seir is the authentic location of Kadesh Barnea, I believe. There's a modern Israeli community called Paran that's located at the entrance of a pretty good-sized wadi, or wet weather stream. And guess what? It says here, he, meaning God, shone forth from Mount Paran. So I think the first line is about when they were at Mount Sinai. The next two lines are about when they were at the Kadesh Barnea site, getting ready to go into the promised land the first time. And so he, God, came from the 10,000s of holy ones with flaming fire at his right hand. Although that line, flaming fire at his right hand, is a little bit uncertain in its Hebrew translation. The Greek Old Testament at this point just simply says, with his angels. And so God, remember, travels from Mount Sinai to Kadesh Barnea with the Israelis. He's there in the flaming column of glowing cloud, and there's an angelic presence, apparently, with them as they travel. And that seems to be what's being talked about here. Now, then comes the 40 years penalty phase, and they end it by coming back to Kadesh Barnea. So we kind of pick up the 40th year at that same site. Verse 3, yes, he loved his people. All his holy ones were in his hand. So they followed in your steps, receiving direction from you. When Moses commanded us a law as a possession for the assembly of Jacob. Almost sounds like there's a little bit of a responsiveness here. Maybe Joshua or Eleazar the high priest are involved in this blessing as well. That the presence of God that went from Mount Sinai to Kadesh Barnea through the penalty phase of the wilderness, back to Kadesh Barnea, and then finally around to the plains of Moab, that was God's presence with his hand on the people, and Moses was right there providing the intercessory office. He was the one speaking from God to them and from them to God. Verse 5, thus he who is became king in or of Yeshurun. Remember, Yeshurun is a poetic or nickname for Israel. Means upright one. And so Moses got in trouble because he wasn't giving God his due. He wasn't giving God his glory. So here in this blessing, God is highlighted as the true leader, the true king of Israel. When the heads of the people were gathered, all the tribes of Israel together. And so that becomes the introduction then to a blessing placed on each of the tribes. Let Reuben live and not die. Let his men be few. So Reuben was, these folks were the descendants of the eldest son of Jacob, Israel. But he lost his right to be the heir. And yet he is first in this list. And I think that it has to do with his standing as the literal firstborn. But the prediction is that his tribe is not going to be all that massive. And they were located only on the east side of the northern part of the Dead Sea. That was where their tribal region was located. Verse 7, and this he said of Judah, which of course was the heir of Jacob Israel, and becomes the royal tribe. Hear, O he who is the voice of Judah, bring him in to his people. With your hands, contend for him and be a help against his adversaries. The word contend here has the idea of a legal argument or struggle or defense. And so God is being said in this blessing to stand up on behalf of Judah, the royal tribe. The tribe that he has the most to say about would be the Levitical tribe. And that starts in verse 8. Of Levi, he said, give to Levi your Thummim and your Urim, to your godly one. Now the Urim, lights, that's the Hebrew word for lights, and thumim, which has to do with judgments or decisions, were the two stones that were in the pocket behind the breastpiece of the high priest. And they were used to get yes and no, yes or no, or either or answers from God. And as I've shared with you many times, I think it was a supernatural mechanism by which one of the stones would glow to indicate the answer. And so this is the prerogative of the high priesthood, that he carries the yes or no divination mechanism for Israel. Whom you tested at Massah, with whom you quarreled at the waters of Meribah. And so it goes back to a little problem at the beginning of the Exodus. And the Levites were faithful in that first problem between the people and God. And then they continued to keep standing up on behalf of God. You may remember that in the matter of Baal Peor, the Levites were the ones that were commissioned by Moses to go through and stop all the illicit partying that was going on. And so that is the reason why he is highlighted as the defender of God's word, even if it costs him close relationships. Verse 9, who said of his father and mother, I regard them not. He disowned his brothers and ignored his children, for they observed your word and kept your covenant. The story of the Baal Peor incident includes Moses telling these guys, you cannot show mercy or compassion even to your closest relatives. If they are partying when they were supposed to stop, they have to be executed. And the Levites went through and did exactly that. So they're kind of highlighted here. Verse 10, they shall teach Jacob your rules and Israel your law. So one of the responsibilities of the Levites was instructional. Teach from God's inspired word. They shall put incense before you and whole burnt offerings on your altar. That would be the priestly duties. They were supposed to act as intercessors from the people to God, asking for forgiveness. Bless, he who is his substance, and accept the work of his hands. Crush the loins of his adversaries, of those who hate him, that they rise not again. So again, a blessing of God's protection upon the religious tribe. Verse 12, of Benjamin, he said, and Benjamin would be the baby of the original Jacob, the beloved of he who is dwells in safety. The high God surrounds him all day long and dwells between his shoulders. Now, prophetically, I think that has to do with the location of the Benjamin tribe. The city of Jerusalem, the future city of Jerusalem, specifically the future Temple Mount, is right smack in the center south portion of the Benjamin tribal inheritance. And so God ends up figuratively dwelling between the shoulders of Benjamin. Of Joseph, verse 13, and this would be the Manassites and the Ephraimites. Blessed by God be his land with the choicest gift of heaven above and of the deep that crouches beneath, with the choicest fruits of the sun and the rich yield of the months, with the finest produce of the ancient mountains and the abundance of the everlasting hills, with the best gifts of the earth and its fullness and the favor of him who dwells in the bush. Of course, that's a reference to God in the burning bush. And may these rest on the head of Joseph, on the pate of him who is prince among his brothers. Remember that Jacob manipulated the situation to honor Joseph as his favorite son. He disinherited him, but then turned around and adopted his two sons so that Joseph ended up getting a double portion of Jacob's property. And so he was the prince of Jacob's desires. A firstborn bull. He has majesty, and his horns are the horns of a wild ox. Often the wild ox was used as a symbol of strength. And so Joseph is not just simply fruitful, as we saw earlier in this blessing, but he is also strong. With them, that is, with his horns, he shall gore the peoples, all of them, to the ends of the earth. So he is going to be a fighter. And there are a lot of fighters that come from the tribal regions of Joseph. They are the 10,000s of Ephraim. They are the thousands of Manasseh. And it ends up that those two tribes actually possess the largest territories together of all the 12 tribes. Judah's tribe area is pretty big, but when you put Ephraim and then West Manasseh and East Manasseh together, they've got even more property. Well, we've got a little bit more left in this blessing and not enough time to really give it justice. So I'm going to encourage you, mark your place right here, read ahead a little bit, and when we get back together again, we'll get back into the Word.